Hi, and welcome to the next in the series of podcasts that I'm doing. I'm going to focus around facilities management and what that means in today's world and where we think it's going. To do that, I've got two dear friends of mine in the studio with me today, Caroline Gardner from Cushman & Wakefield. Hello, Caroline.
Hi, Michael.
And Mary Louise back. Welcome back to my studio, because this is your second time around, so you're a glutton for punishment, but nice to see you again.
Thanks, Michael. Thank you for the invite.
And for those of you that don't know, Mary Louise runs European, Middle East and African real estate for Microsoft, which means she has responsibility for everything to do with property. So I've got two experts in the room. So my job is to try and keep this on time and manageable somehow. And I think what I'd like to do is kick it off with you, Mary Louise, and just say, if we talk about the customer journey and facilities management, can you maybe just start at the beginning of that and tell us what that means to you and the way you think about facilities management?
Sure. So I think, you know, sort of the journey is before you even arrive at the place that you're going to start. So it's very much in terms of, you know, your mood is determined by the fact of you go onto the tube and you're crammed there and, you know, it's an awful experience. So, you know, by the time you get into the workplace, you know, you're probably either really, really happy because you've had a great journey in, or you're pretty cheesed off because the journey, particularly if you're based in London, isn't always optimal. So from us, from a perspective of, you know, sort of entering that building, you know, it starts right from the beginning when you get out of bed and the mood that you're in. So, you know, when you come into a building, for me, it's all about, you know, sort of that greeting. You know, you get that warm smile, you get that engagement, you get the eye contact. And for me, that is so important. And, you know, how often you get into a reception, they're hidden behind big screens, they're sort of working away and you're sort of standing there and you're thinking, okay, right. You know, hello, I'm here. And so, you know, again, you know, that's not a good customer experience. I think for me, the best customer experience is people who actually stand away from the desk. And that's how we do it in Dublin. When you walk through the foyer, the lobby, you've got somebody actually waiting with a service, actually waiting for you to be greeted. And that to me is a much better method of greeting as you come through the door.
Okay, and I'd say two things. One, because I live in London, tell everyone to cycle to work, because then you get to work feeling great. And we'll come on and talk about amenities and provision of everything you need if you're a cyclist. And the second is, I guess, and maybe we'll come back to robotics and AI, you're not a believer in the robotic front desk.
Well, actually, I am. So when I was working at Bank of America, I did actually explore where it's not cost effective to actually have somebody behind a reception, and particularly in areas where you need different language skills. So, for example, you know, where you need people who can speak different languages, etc. Actually, robotics can actually work very, very well. So I think it's horses for courses. So it does depend on what you're actually trying to achieve, and also the cost point as well. So it can work incredibly well. And one of the things that I actually did see that they were actually trialing out in Ireland several years ago was for it to be a robot, but actually you'd press a button and it would actually go into like a call center. So you would actually speak to a human being, but it wouldn't actually be based behind a desk.
A bit like a chat box.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
And it's actually something that we're looking at in the business. A receptionist called Alice. And in those sort of small environments where, to your point, it's not cost effective to have somebody there, you can have Alice, who is connected then to the internal system. Mm-hmm. So you can log in any language, you can pick your language on the screen, and you get this interaction. And I think that, to your point, works in lots of places. And interestingly, I was in Dublin last week, and the experience going into the building was great. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really was good in terms of that interaction. And I think, you know, we all talk about it, but offices are hotels with desks, not beds. And so the whole experience can be emulated from a hotel service environment in terms of those touch points and how they can connect with the user coming in, because it makes a huge difference.
So tell me about the difference then between, so in effect, you have customers coming to your buildings and you have employees. Mm. And the experience that you're trying to create the same for both, or do you actively differentiate between the two types of experiences?
I think that's a really interesting question. In most corporate buildings on a Monday morning, employees forget their passes. And I can virtually guarantee the security desk is in the back and beyond of the building. And that employee is not happy by the time they get to their desk because they've had this experience of queuing with all those people that have left their security pass behind. So I'm a great believer that you've got to adapt experiences for the different individuals and users in buildings. So a visitor experience, somebody coming in that's never been there before, what does that look like in terms of how do we communicate to them before they arrive in the building? But then you've got the employees that are going into the building day in, day out, who in my experience here in Old Broad Street, we've got Terry. I arrive early, he's always there, he's a friendly chappy. It's a great experience and lifts my mood. And it's about finding that balance. Because, you know, to the point of cost, we've got to be mindful of that. But we do really want to make sure that people arriving feel welcomed in a way that they're comfortable with. And we've also got to accept different cultures too. You know, I'm quite tactile. Not everybody's tactile. And from a cultural perspective, stop it, Michael. So that experience is really different, but it has to be understood. And I think it's an art in itself to work through. It's not just let's put a reception in. It's many things that form part of that.
So you've got this, and I completely agree, and it's so different from the, if you like, the facilities management experience or lack of experience that was being asked for 5-10 years ago. I mean, it seems that in the last couple of years, we've really taken a big step towards thinking about the employee and the customer. And I'm not sure what's shifted the thinking. And the same thing is true when we get into the building and we're looking at office space. And whether it's co-working space or collaborative space or it's private office space, we seem to spend a lot more time thinking about giving people different experiences depending what they want to do, which again, from an FM, we're now complicating the FM world even more at this point because we've said it's not one size fits all. So Mary, how do you think about that? I mean, I guess, do you buy into this? We need lots of different spaces. And if you do, how do you think about that from an FM point of view?
So, you know, we provide, you know, very different work experiences from the desk. We don't have many offices. So we've really migrated
you
away
mean
from
individual
that
offices,
individual offices,
right.
Yes. So, you know, for us, you know, when I look at sort of, you know, let's take an example of our Paddington office, which is a really good example. You've got some really, really, you know, creative, funky places where, you know, you can play Xbox, as you would naturally imagine. You've got table tennis tables. You've got little golfing putting. So that is where people can actually just sort of tune out and just relax and have a bit of fun. And also, you know, that creates that teamwork. And so, you know, you create a different bond with people when you start to play with them. So you've got that type of space. And then another really nice feature is on our terrace, you've got some frameries. So frameries are sort of very sort of small working areas where you've got a table where you can squeeze in and you can have it for four. You can have an individual booth for one or, you know, so there's some really, really great places where you can literally sit in a box and actually focus and really work. And then you've got other spaces where it's open plan. And, you know, we don't have desks in some of the spaces. Some of them are their old dining tables that we've reconverted. So we sit at dining room tables. So this morning when I came back from my visits, I sat there and, you know, I worked with my team. So there was four of us around a table and, you know, the whole area was just absolutely packed. And then you've got individual work desks. So, you know, you've got desks where you've got multiple screens. So, again, different people have different requirements in terms of what type of work that they do. You've got people that need sit-stand desks because, you know, from a well-being perspective, you know, we're really pushing the well-being perspective. And so we do provide, and we have lots of loungy spaces as well. So it's almost as if you're going into, you know, into Heathrow or whatever. So, you know, where there's lots of sort of sofas where people can sit or people sit in puffs and, you know, work from there. So, you know, the choice is phenomenal.
And I guess I've got two questions just to take that down a layer or two. If you were being cynical, you could suggest that that's just a fad. And therefore, what's the evidence, Caroline, that being able to play Xbox or ping pong at the office is a good thing for the employees? And the fact that they have so much choice is also a good thing. I mean, there's an awful lot of literature that says that open plan is noisy, it's this, it's that, and it doesn't get people's best work. There's other stuff that people have, and it's all anecdotal and it's people's opinions. There's very little evidence. So can we just sort of dive into that? Because
sure.
That's where you've got to justify, right?
No, true. And I think this is where facilities management has become an integral part of an organization's business, really, because it's actually helping HR create the environments to attract people to work. And there's lots of discussions and documents and papers that have been written about it. And I think that, you know, when you see the banking sector move into this type of working that stereotypically would be in these very sort of closed office type environments, and certainly my experience working with some of the global banks, where you would have never thought some of the managing directors would have wanted to work on the floor in a mixed environment with their colleagues, they're doing it and they're actually really enjoying it. And it's not anecdotal, it's actually feedback, because what we are doing as well as part of facilities management is looking at having champions on the floors, engaging with people, making sure that they're comfortable with the space that they're working in. And that's not interrupting their workflow. That's just being there and actually checking in on a regular basis and actually getting to know the people that work in that environment and being the go-to person. And I think what I would say about organizations too is, and people in organizations, sometimes they're also fearful of being with their teams because actually it's not been a natural place for them to work. And actually when they do go out there and work with people, you find they understand a lot more around what's happening. So you drive that sort of agile, lean type working environment. And so what that should hopefully do is reduce the number of emails because people are actively talking to each other. And so that engagement and communication really sort of changes. But in terms of the sort of Xbox and the scooters to go around buildings in, I think different environments require different elements of that. And I think it's generational. And I was talking to a client recently and he was saying to me, he said, you know, Caroline, there are some people now that have got over the scooter and the gaming bit. They've got a family and they want to get home to the family. But I think, you know, to Mary Louise's point, you're creating those different environments where people can actually enjoy something that suits them at that moment in time.
I agree, because in terms of, to your point, it's all about giving people choice, and it's about enabling people with technology to be able to work any place, anywhere. And I can work anywhere. I can work, you know, with a laptop on my knee. I work very well, you know, at airports, etc. And everybody's starting to get much more agile. And it also gives people the opportunities to take, you know, to sort of start working just before they take their kids to school. They take their kids to school, then they go back working, and then maybe they'll go into the office a little bit later on. So it does give people choice.
It does. And I guess just to press the point, how do you, or I guess I was going to say, how do you prove that it's beneficial? Or, and the other question, the other side of the coin is, do you need to, or is it now so accepted? Because what you're talking about could potentially involve taking more space rather than less, could involve more facilities being offered, i.e. cost. So everything that you're talking about, as good or as great as it sounds, is probably costing a corporation more money, not less. So how do you, when you start running business cases and putting numbers on pieces of paper, justify without any empirical evidence that it's actually beneficial?
Well, we do have empirical evidence because we actually do monitor and measure how many people are in our buildings. And so therefore, our conversations with the business are much more empirical than they ever used to be. So we have a thing called a PAA, which allows us actually to triangulate and actually see how many people are actually in the office. And so when people say, oh, you know, we need more space, it's very easy to actually sit down with them and say, well, actually, we're finding it a little bit hard to actually understand why you think it's full. Now, you know, clearly, you know, it's the Monday and the Friday, and I think it's down to FM. And I think that's where we
exactly
really play a huge role, mm-hmm, is to actually encourage people to want to come into the office. And I actually like coming into the office. I like the camaraderie. Mm-hmm. I like being with people. And so if you create the right environments, then people will want to come in. And it's very, very interesting. In our Schiphol office, it's rammed. You know, it's jam-packed full of people, because people want to be there.
Yes.
The food is great.
Mm.
you know, the gizmos that we have, it's sort of, you can walk through and it's very depressing. If you don't smile enough, it says you're much older than you are. And so the more that you smile, the younger you get. So, you know, it's fantastic. And so you had, you know, sort of different sort of funky things like that, which are really, really cool. And the place is always full because people think it's a destination point. And it's, you know, it's easy to collaborate with people. And we don't just want our employees. We also encourage our partners, our customers, and anybody to actually come into our workplace. And that's the creative environment. And that's the massive change that we've had over a period of time.
Let me just pick up on that with you, Caroline, because it seems to me that there has been a massive change. And you referenced that a little bit earlier, hoteling or the hotel environment. So maybe we could talk about that, because it seems to me that all these ideas are coming from many different areas. So as FM professionals, how do you pick out the really good ones that you think this would help my business, the business that I'm working for, create better spaces, increase productivity, all the things we've been talking about? I mean, where does the FM world get its ideas from?
That's interesting. I mean, many areas, and it's not hotels. It's not the actual office environment that those ideas come from. It's actually traveling. And I think that's the other thing. The world is a small place, really. People have much more accessibility to many countries, nuances, environments. And so therefore, people are looking at things more holistically. Living walls in buildings, you never would have seen. You might have seen a plant pot, but you'd have never seen a living wall with a dead plant in it. And you'd have never seen a living wall. And again, you know, running and managing a living wall is very technical. You know, you've got to have specialists. So coming back to the point of FM and what does that mean and how do we impact, you know, that is also about having specialists. But the environment and the feedback is about people putting ideas together. You know, the management team with the Microsoft, I was with the Microsoft team last week in Dublin. And, you know, one of the activities was, okay, let's look at the experiences we want to create for visitors, customers, but visitors and customers from different parts of the business, and what is different. And what I find with many clients is that they're looking at that. And so therefore, the ideas come from a group of people. It's not just a journal that used to be. And if we also think about facilities management, you know, people would say, oh, it's engineering, it's cleaning. No. It's about the experience. And how do we bring that to life? And I think also what we're finding is a lot of people that are coming into the industry are not necessarily from a hospitality background. If you talk to WeWork, where do they recruit from? They recruit sort of graduates that have got analytical brains, but are great with the customer. So they're looking at data and they're looking at trends and they're looking at what people like in those types of environment. So they start to evaluate space and look at what works and what doesn't work. So it comes from a massive area of, well, different areas, different people. And any magazine that you pick up now or newspaper, you can pick up ideas from that in terms of what may work in the workplace. Whereas before, it was a very standard, oh, this is what we do in FM. Don't test the boundaries because, you know, that's been a bit maverick. Well, now it's, you know, maverick. Anything maverick goes. Is that, yeah. However, underneath all of that, we mustn't forget risk and governance and management of that space to keep it safe, because we have to do the assessments. You know, electric bikes, we had to make sure that HR signed off that people could use the electric bikes because, you know, if they fell off, where was the claim going to be? So let's not forget what we have to deliver.
The hygiene.
Exactly. But the space, you know, anything goes, really.
We can do a podcast on hygiene FM.
We could.
That would sound really exciting.
Or I won't be doing it anyway.
Yeah, we'll have all fallen asleep.
But just building on what Caroline's saying, I mean, the inspiration I also get is by actually going visiting other people's offices. Yeah. So I was very lucky to actually, and I'm sure you've been to Bloomberg's office. But, you know, for me, the experience was fantastic. Mm. You walk in, the reception there, you know, you take your name, you take your photograph. And by the time you get up to the top, where you've got that big restaurant area. So again, you know, it's amazing as you get into their building, that, you know, their entrance is on that huge area where you've got all the all the food offerings, etc. And the security guard said, oh, hello, Mary Louise. This is the first time you've been here, isn't it? Yeah. And I said, and I honestly, it blew me away. Yeah. And that's really what I'm looking for in our receptions is that, you know, so because you can pre-register, so people know who's going to come in and we will know who they are. So in our lobby experience, they'll go, well, you know, hello, Caroline. Nice to see you again. You know, welcome back. And that, you know, when people remember, and that's what you get in hotels. Yes. If you're a regular and somebody goes, hi, Caroline, nice to see you back. And you get that at the Ritz-Carlton when you go to Herzliya. Mm-hmm. You know, they know who you are. Yes. And that, to me, typifies. It makes you feel really good. And yes. You go, wow, they actually remembered who I was.
And interestingly, you know, if I go back some years, a lot of the hotel organizations would do research. Certainly the high-end operations would do research on everybody coming in before they arrived. So they actually had somebody doing research on those individuals and those touch points from the chauffeur arriving, the concierge on the door, he's got it in his ear, it's Mr. Jones, that's the registration number, he's coming in now, he likes to be called Stephen. And that whole, to your point, it's not complicated. And what I would say, it always takes it back to, and I know we talked about robotics and things like that, but it takes it back to people. Our people are the heart and soul of our businesses. And if we can get the right behaviors and choose the right people in those environments, they create the experiences every time. You know, Terry isn't trained to do what he does. It's just his personality. Exactly. And so, and you feel the natural delivery versus a scripted delivery. Because I think that is also important. I don't know if you find that, Mary Louise.
And it's scripted, interesting, because, you know, building on that one, I don't know whether you ever saw the Claridge's program, which absolutely blew me away. And they had, you know, these particular Americans that came in and, you know, he had the credenza here and he did that. And that was all scripted. And that's because that's what he wanted. And I think sometimes it does need to be scripted because, you know, that's what the expectation is. But it needs to be also feel natural as well. And so there's that balance of making sure that you've got sort of that list of things that we need to hit, but that it's warm and it's human. And, you know, so it's that lovely touchy feeling. And back to your point, you know, we're not going to hug everybody, but it's about that warm feeling. You know, as you come through the door, the eye contact, the wow, the smile. Exactly. Hello. Hi. Nice to see you. Hope you had a great journey. Yeah. You know, let me take your umbrella if it's pouring with rain. And, you know, can I get you a cup of coffee? You know, that immediately, as soon as you sort of like, wow, that's really, really good.
Yeah, it's very refreshing to hear that, because I do think in the world, and we probably inevitably need to talk about how we use technology in a positive way as opposed to a negative way. And kind of what you've been describing is where you do need that human touch, feel, interaction. And it's nice in many ways that despite all the technology we now have, that is still the most important thing. Mm. So you should use technology to take away the stuff that you don't need that human interaction for. So why don't we touch on the technology world as it relates to FM and where you see that has a benefit or potential benefits to the running of FM inside office buildings as opposed to not, i.e. we're not going to put a robot on the front desk unless it's remote. And I mean, we talked about that at the beginning.
We might, but it could enhance it again. You know, one of the things that we looked at before in Bank of America was that when receptions are really, really busy, you know, if you don't want a queue, then you can go to a kiosk.
So you have an alternative. Yeah.
So you've got an alternative. Uh-huh. And also, you know, there are sometimes when you want to see, you know, are the tube lines, you know, screwed, you know, is my plane going to be late, to be able to actually just touch in a kiosk really, really quickly and just ask some of those logistical things. So I think there is a place for everything. Mm. And I think that we're really, really starting to fine tune some of those offerings.
And how do you use technology in terms of, I guess, if you take a large office building as the sort of exemplar, so you've got complexity around design of the space for lots of different people, different cultures, as you've mentioned, Caroline, customers coming in, visitors who may be coming to fix. I mean, you've got a whole plethora of different types of people doing different things. How do you use technology in that sense to help people navigate from the beginning of the journey when they walk in the door to the conference room they're meant to be at or to find the person? Is that something that's a positive use of technology?
I think it can be. I think wayfinding is really interesting in buildings. And it was a hospital, actually, and the wayfinding was absolutely terrible. There were so many signs, you didn't know where you were going, right? So you go around in circles continually. And sometimes I find corporate buildings are a bit like that. And I think, you know, in terms of apps, and there have been a number of apps developed whereby the floor plans are put onto the application. We've got our Workplace Edge application, and you can actually identify where you are in the building, and it can direct you to that space. And I think that that application could really take off, because I think wayfinding is hugely expensive. If you make any changes or you know, you need to do something different within the building, it costs a lot of money to change that. Whereas actually by using screens, by using applications, I think there's opportunity. And I think when we think about disability, you know, applications can help a huge amount in that environment to guide people through buildings. So there is absolutely a place for it. And I think, you know, if you look at the airports, they're now looking at you checking in your own bags by going to the, you know, the airports are always trying to take it one step further, aren't they? I was listening this morning about getting on a plane. They can cut it down by 2 or 3 minutes, but, you know, is it worth it? But anyway, but I think it's about looking at where you use people touch points and where you use that technology to enhance that experience and actually take away some of the other aspects of facilities management or building management that don't add value but can add a lot of cost. And by using applications, I think it could drive a lot of efficiency.
And I think it can be also, you know, so that's more the sort of the really lovely fluffy end part of it. But there's also sort of that pragmatic in terms of in our toilet areas, in sort of some of those sort of more sort of hygiene areas where, you know, a certain amount of clicks. And then so you actually do the cleaning by, you know, 50 clicks come in, then, you know, we dispatch a cleaner in, or to actually have a screen on the side that says, please service it.
Yeah.
So that actually you do service on demand or you do it service. So much more empirical. Mm-hmm. And so for our bathrooms, you know, that for me, again, using technology in a smart way to ensure that they're constantly clean and they're constantly gives people the opportunity to say, I think it needs servicing. Can somebody come? So rather than, you know, right, every 2 hours, you know, you come along with your mop and you clean it or you replenish. It's a much more intelligent way to actually deliver building services.
And we, you know, with the sensor technology, one of the big issues when people log a ticket and you see the sign on the door out of order, and it just irritates you because it feels like it's been there for years. But the technology, by actually having something up in the bathrooms that says it will be fixed by this time, and it gets fixed sooner, all of a sudden the expectation, oh, wow, that's, you know, and so all of a sudden you're enhancing people's expectations. And I think that's where technology can really help with the sensors and space sensors to, you know, have people seating in buildings. But it really drives efficiency too.
Okay. We've got a few minutes left. And what I wanted to touch on maybe to end was a kind of a combination of a couple of thoughts. One is, what we've talked about is an awful lot of different ideas sort of flooding the FM world, and it's clearly taken a new direction, which I think is really exciting, and people probably want to get into FM now more so than ever before. We've talked a little bit about the future of where FM is going and where technology plays a role, but to bring it back to the human element, I guess two questions. One is, are you getting a lot of ideas being fed down into the real estate groups by the employee groups, by the C-suite, as to what they want? Or is it the other way around? And how do you, once you come up with all these great ideas, get the buy-in from senior management that what you're suggesting probably hasn't been done before, but you know it's going to make a bit difference to the business?
That's a really, really good question. You know, every C-suite is different, isn't it? So every country, every culture. Mm-hmm. So some people are much more keen to take on change than others. So it does depend where, particularly in my region. It has to be a good idea, doesn't it?
It has to add value,
and it can't be just gimmicky just for the sake of it. And it has to be so that people can see, we're going to retain the best staff. We're going to motivate people. We're going to, you know, the human productivity piece is going to get much better. So there has to be an element of why do it? Because if not, why bother? Mm. And then to be able, once you have the idea, is then to actually do the change management piece properly. And sometimes we don't do that piece properly and it's not adopted. And then it's same old, same old. So that adoption piece is really critical and we don't spend enough time doing it.
Yeah, and we haven't talked about that yet, but you're right. And best ideas can go off the rails because they haven't been put into place in the right way.
Agreed. And do you find Mary Louise as well with the C-suite? They like the people around them that they know and they tend to get to know the receptionist, the cleaner. And actually, they generally, in my experience, want to make sure that if we're changing something, it actually works for those people too.
Agreed. And drivers as well.
Yes.
Drivers are really critical.
Yes, I'm sure we've all got stories about chauffeurs and drivers, which we won't be talking about today. Fascinating conversation. That's kind of our time up. Thank you both for coming into the studio. You, Mary Louise, for the second time. So I really appreciate it. It's been great fun talking to you both, you as well, Caroline, about the world of FM. And I look forward maybe in 6 months or a year hearing what's new in this area. So thanks again.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Great. Thanks, Michael.